The guy met with the Saudi. Now he's meeting with him again. Has to be a reason. Negley left, and Reacher stayed in his room alone, because that was where Griezmann would call first. No doubt about that. Purely as a courtesy. Just simple detectives hoping for favors one to the other. Sinclair would be called second. But the phone didn't ring. Reacher's neck itched like it did after every haircut. He took off his new T-shirt and shook it out. Then he stripped completely and took another shower, with the door open, and one ear or the other out of the water stream. The phone didn't ring. He toweled off and dressed again and looked out the window. Then he sat down in a green velvet chair. The phone didn't ring. There was a knock at the door. Sinclair. Taller than average, but no wider. The dress, the pearls, the nylons, the shoes, the face, and the hair.
"I assume this is the best place to wait," she said. "I assume Griezmann will call you first."
Not dumb, either. "I should apologize," Reacher said. "I made two errors of judgment. No disrespect was intended."
She said, "May I come in?"
"Of course." He stepped aside, and she walked in past him. He smelled her perfume. She looked at the phone, and then she sat down in the same chair he had been using. She said,
"I didn't take offense. We drafted you to get things done. There's no buyer's remorse. Ultimately, it's you I'm worried about."
"Why me?"
"You were right. We ask you to do things, and if they turn out well, we all claim the credit. But if they turn out badly, you're on your own. That must be stressful. Like the thing you just did in Bosnia. That can't have been pleasant."
"Actually, it was," Reacher said.
"Technically, it was a double homicide.
The first guy was the commander of some ragtag ethnic army. The second guy was his second in command. To set an example, they arrested a famous soccer player from the other community, the star of a local franchise. They handcuffed him to a radiator and broke both his legs with a sledgehammer. They paid particular attention to his knees and ankles. They left him there for an hour to contemplate his future. Then they had a couple of mattresses hauled into the room. Then they had the guy's wife and daughter hauled into the room. They had the whole battalion line up at the door. They raped them to death, right in front of the guy's eyes. He kept hitting his head on the radiator. He was trying to kill himself. He didn't succeed. His wife lasted nearly 24 hours. His daughter was dead in 6. She bled out. She was 8 years old. I spent 2 weeks confirming the facts. I saw the mattresses. So all in all, I felt pretty good about pulling the trigger. Like a guy taking the trash to the curb. Maybe not fun, in and of itself, but afterward you have a clean and tidy garage, which feels good, that's for sure."
"I'm sorry."
"For what?"
"That there are such things in the world."
"Get used to it," Reacher said. "Things can only get worse."
"I got a message from Waterman. Wiley was busted 4 times for selling stolen goods. Nothing stuck. But you know how that goes."
"Outstanding," Reacher said. "Now he's in the army."
"Where all kinds of things are streaming back to storage depots because the front line suddenly disappeared. Where, as a result, security isn't what it was. Maybe old habits die hard."
"But what? What is he stealing and what is he selling?"
Sinclair didn't answer. The phone didn't ring. There was a knock at the door, a bellboy.
Or a bell girl, to be precise, with a trim uniform and a little hat. from the lobby with a package, a plain white envelope, large, unmarked. It looked to have half an inch of paper in it, that kind of size, that kind of stiffness. The girl said,
"For you, sir?"
Reacher said, "Who from?"
"The gentleman wouldn't give his name."
"What did he look like?"
"I didn't see well. Normal American, I think. Quite ordinary."
One of Orozco's guys, Reacher thought. Not Orozco himself. Too distinctive. His sergeant, maybe. The guy who was driving the car the first time out. Deniability. He took the package and said, "Thank you." The girl headed back down the stairs. Reacher unflapped the envelope and peeked inside. Sinclair stood at his elbow. He could smell her perfume. He riffed the top of the papers with his thumb. He saw every first line. They were all familiar. It was a duplicate copy of Wiley's file, the same in every respect, except this time the photocopier had been short on toner. The print was pale. Horace Nunn Wiley fading away. Sinclair said,
"Who sent it?"
"Orozco," Reacher said. "No one else knows I'm here."
"Why would he send you a second copy?"
"Did you order yours through the Joint Chiefs?"
"Yes."
"Maybe somehow Orozco heard about it. Maybe he thought it was a big deal. A high-level panic over a private first class might attract his attention. You had it sent to Hamburg. Maybe he's giving me an early warning. Or a head start, knowing I'm in Hamburg myself. Not knowing I've already seen the file."
"The Joint Chiefs wouldn't leak."
"Then maybe Stuttgart did. Or Personnel Command. Orozco has friends everywhere. He's a very popular guy. He has a sunny disposition." He dropped the envelope on the bed. Sinclair was still at his elbow, very close to him. He could smell her perfume, the dress, the pearls, the shoes, the face and the hair. The phone didn't ring.
She said, "Waiting makes me nervous."
He said nothing.
"I can't relax."
He said nothing.
"Do you get nervous?"
"Yes," he thought. "I'm nervous right now." "No," he said. "Doesn't help anything."
"You had your hair cut."
"Where I got the idea about Wiley. The barber had a picture."
"The barber did a nice job."
"I hope so. He charged me $5.
"That's cheap."
"You think?"
"You should try where I go in D.C.
He said, "I think yours is more complicated." She said nothing, just looked at him. He said, "May I?" She didn't answer. He raised his hand and brushed her forehead with his fingertips and slid his fingers into her hair and ran them through, the texture alternately thick and soft as the waves came and went. He swept it all back and left part of it hooked behind her ear and part of it hanging free. It looked good. He took his hand away. He said, "That's how you comb it, right?" She said,
"Now do the other side."
He used his other hand the same way, barely touching her forehead, burying his fingers deep, pushing them through. This time he left his hand where it ended up, which was cupped on the back of her neck, which was slender and warm. She put her own hand flat on his chest. At first, he thought it was a warning or a prohibition, a stop sign. Then it became an exploration. She moved it around, side to side, up and down, and then she slid it in behind his own neck where the cut hair had itched. She pulled down, and he pulled up, and they kissed. At first, tentatively, and then harder. Her tongue was cool and slow. Her eyes were open. He found the zipper tab on the back of her dress, a tiny metal teardrop. He eased it down between her shoulder blades, past the small of her back, below her waist. Her lips moved against his, and she said,
"Is this a good idea?"
"Feels pretty good to me," he said, "so far."
"Are you sure?"
"My rule of thumb is those kind of questions are best answered afterward. Experience beats conjecture every time." She smiled and shrugged forward, and the dress slid off her shoulders and puddled at her feet. She was wearing a black lace bra and black pantyhose, and her shoes. She took the hem of his new T-shirt in her hands and pulled it up over his head, on tiptoe. It fell behind him. She unclipped his belt. He kicked off his shoes. She did the same. She peeled off her pantyhose. Under it was black lace underwear, filmy and insubstantial. She pulled his pants down and he stepped out of them. They kissed again and staggered to the bed like a four-legged creature. She pushed him down on Orozco's envelope. She climbed on top. He reached behind her and unhooked her bra. She rolled away and lay on her back and peeled her panties off. He did the same, arching one way, curling the other. She climbed back on and rode him like a cowgirl. Hips forward, shoulders back, face up, eyes closed. He kept his eyes open. She was a sight to see. She had pale skin with moles and freckles here and there, and small breasts, and a flat, hard waist and muscles in her bunched and moving thighs. She was still wearing the pearls. They swung and bounced. The hollow of her throat was filmed with sweat. Her arms were behind her, held out and away from her body, her wrists bent, her hands flat and open, her palms close to the bed, hovering, skimming a cushion of air, as if she was balancing. Which she was. She was balancing on a single point, driving all her weight down through it, rocking back and forth, easing side to side as if chasing the perfect sensation, and finding it, and losing it, and finding it again, and holding on to it all the way to the breathless end. Which was where he was headed to, that was for damn sure. No stopping now. He pushed back hard, lifting his hips, floating her up, her feet off the bed, her knees clamping, thrust and counter-thrust all in one place. Afterward, he stayed on his back, and she snuggled alongside him. He traced patterns on her hip with his fingertip. She said,
"So now, answer the questions."
He said, "Yes, I think it was a good idea. And yes, I'm sure."
"No command and control issues?"
"I thought my control was pretty good."
"I mean, I shouldn't have. You're my subordinate, technically."
"Your underling, in fact."
"I suppose."
"And thankful for it." He traced a pattern on her hip with his fingertip. She said,
"Tell me about Sergeant Nagley."
He said, "What about her?"
"Why isn't she an officer?"
"She has more than enough ability. She doesn't want to be an officer."
"And she's crazy about you. But she won't sleep with you."
That's what friends are for.
Is she okay?
She has haptophobia.
Which is what?
A fear of being touched. The army made her see a doctor.
What happened to her?
Was she assaulted? She says not. She says she was born like that.
Shame,
Sinclair said, and snuggled closer. You bet, Reacher said. He traced the pattern on her hip with his fingertip. Then he said, wait a damn minute. He scrabbled under her for Orozco's envelope. This time, he pulled the copied file all the way out. Taped to the front was a smaller envelope, Griezmann's envelope, with the fingerprint in it, from the lever in the dead hooker's car. Sinclair said,
I don't believe in coincidence.
Reacher looked at the envelope and scanned through the file. No notes, no handwriting, nothing from Orozco, just the tape, firmly affixed. A message, definitive but deniable. Sometimes we have to believe in coincidence, Reacher said, especially a small one. The populations are not large. Guys willing to betray their country for money, guys willing to use a prostitute, guys willing to kill a prostitute, like a Venn diagram. Not many people where the circles meet. I guess he was celebrating. The deal was halfway done. He had financial prospects. But something got out of hand, which has a huge silver lining, in a way, for us right now, tonight and tomorrow. It's a regular homicide now. Griezmann can come out in the open. He can use federal resources. He can give that drawing to every cop in town. Sinclair was quiet for a beat, and then she shook her head and said,
no, we can never admit we ran that print at his request, and it would only confuse the issue. One thing at a time, we want him for the $100 million. That comes first. That's more important.
The hooker might not agree.
We can't hang him twice. And we can't have him arrested by the Germans, because he's ours, but justice will be done. This time, it's an order.
Yes, ma'am, Reacher said.
He put the file back in the envelope and timed it out in his head. 5 streets away, in the woman's apartment. Wiley had been there while Reacher was eating dinner with Nagley in McLean, Virginia. Of all the diners in all the towns. He lay back down on his side, and he rolled Sinclair over on her front, and he put his hand high on the back of her thigh. She said,
already?
He said, I'm younger than you.
The phone rang. Griezmann, checking in. Reacher put him on the speaker. Griezmann asked about the fingerprint. Reacher said there was no news yet. Sinclair looked away. Griezmann said there was nothing to report from the surveillance operations. So far, there had been no sign of Wiley at the bar. So far, at the safe house, a mail carrier had brought a package, which had then sat unclaimed on a table in the lobby and was still there. Apart from that, no one else had gone in or come out, except for what was probably a daughter from either the Turkish or the Italian diplomatic families, probably going out for the evening. To a dance club, possibly. She was in her early 20s, with jet black hair and olive skin. Very good looking, Griezmann said, according to contemporaneous reports from his men. The sight had brightened their day, because absolutely nothing else was going on. But they were nevertheless still committed. They would hold their positions for the time being, They would have to thin out by evening when street parking would be harder to find after everyone in the neighborhood was home from work. Sinclair said,
"Last time the meeting happened late in the afternoon, which is right about now."
"Wait a damn minute," Reacher said again. "What about the lamp in the window? Something changed. It is, but it isn't.
We blew it.
It's a messenger, but not the same messenger. It's not a man, it's a woman. We fell for it. We're missing the rendezvous. It's happening right now." Chapter 22. Reacher told Griezmann to get all his units moving immediately in pursuit of the good-looking girl, but Sinclair told him no, sit tight for the moment. To Reacher, she said,
"You're only guessing. She could be Turkish or Italian. Would these people even use a woman?"
"I was in Israel," Reacher said. "These people use women all the time."
"You're gambling."
"And so far I'm winning. Look at me right now, for instance." Sinclair paused a beat. Then she said to Griezmann,
"Keep one car on the safe house. Get all the others moving."
The new messenger walked south out of the neighborhood and then turned west to loop under the Alsen-Alster Lake from St. Georg to St. Pauli on her way to her appointment, which was in a club on a street called the Reeperbahn. She had walked the route many times in her imagination, the physical details built up around her by many hours of briefing, the sights and sounds and smells described so many times that reality felt bland and small by comparison. She had been warned that Wiley would choose a rendezvous point he hoped would embarrass a person of the Islamic faith, a male person, to be specific. He wouldn't expect a woman. He had a mean, competitive streak. He would want 2 out of 3 from alcohol, girls, and hatred. On this occasion, it would be the first and the second, she figured, from what she had been told about the street called the Reeperbahn, girls and alcohol. But she would handle it. Great struggles required great sacrifices, and she was from the tribal areas. She was sure she had seen worse. Reacher called Griezmann back and asked if the pretty girl had been seen near the bar. The answer was no. Wiley neither. No sign. Reacher said, "Okay, they're meeting somewhere else. Get those cars moving, too." This time, Sinclair just nodded. Griezmann said,
"But false men didn't see the girl."
"Doesn't matter," Reacher said. "They have the drawing of Wiley's face. Where we find one, we'll find the other."
The new messenger turned left into the Reeperbahn and was hit by all the light and all the noise she was expecting, flashing and blinking and glaring and thumping and booming and distorting, not bland and small anymore. This time, it was more than she had imagined. She took a breath and walked on. She knew the name of the club she was looking for. In a manner of speaking, she knew the shape its letters made. She knew it had a photograph in its window of a naked woman and a German shepherd, which was a kind of dog. Inside, it would smell of beer. She had been told there would be things she might prefer not to look at. She heard police sirens, howling and baying in the distance. She slowed down, suddenly uncertain. Many places had the same letters in their names, the same shapes, mostly at what Westerners would call the end of the word, like a suffix repeated over and over. Then suddenly she understood. All such places had steps leading down to rooms under the ground, like caves. Keller. Part of a word. It meant underground cave. She walked on. She found the place she wanted. It was lit up red. It had a narrow door with a narrow window alongside it, sandwiched between two other places, a lobby with a stairhead. The window carried the promised photograph. It was bleached by many daylight hours. It showed a naked woman on her back with a big dog squatting over her, its hindquarters over her face. She had the dog's penis in her mouth. No big deal, not to one from the tribal areas. The messenger had seen it done before. Boys on men, mostly, on command, or sometimes goats. She pushed the door and went inside. There was a sharp chemical smell, astringent. She had smelled the same thing in the airport bathroom. There was a big man on a stool. Men had to pay him, but women didn't, what they called a cover charge. She had been coached. She smiled at him shyly and set off down the stairs. They were narrow. At the bottom was blue light and a roar of noise. Music, talking, the slam of heavy glass pitchers on wooden tables. She stepped into the basement room. There was a lit stage at the far end. A naked woman was bent double, having sex with a donkey. The donkey was in a kind of hammock to take its weight off the woman's back. The room was crowded with men, all of them rearing up and craning their necks. They were shouting and grunting in time with the donkey's bewildered thrusts. She saw Wiley two-thirds of the way back, alone at a table. She had memorized his face. He had a tall glass of golden liquid. It was half gone. Beer, she assumed. She stood still. Men were looking at her. She had on black pants and her travel shirt. Open two buttons. She ignored the looks and threaded her way between the tables. There was a clatter of hooves as the donkey finished and struggled out of its hammock. All around her, men clapped and cheered. The naked woman straightened up and waved to them, graciously. In Reacher's room, they heard the phone ringing through the wall, next door in Sinclair's room. Then it stopped, and Reacher's own phone rang in turn. It was Bishop from the consulate, the CIA head of station. He wanted Sinclair. She put him on speaker, and he said, "The Iranian just called it in. About the lamp in the window? The messenger is a woman, and as of right now, she's out of the house."
"We're on it already," Sinclair said.
"But not really," Reacher said. "It's a hopeless task. Not going to work. Griezmann's guys have got an hour, maximum. 12 cars in a big city. It's way too random. I suggest we go to Plan B immediately."
"Which is what?"
Bishop asked. "Pull Griezmann's guys back to the safe house and hit the messenger on her way back in. Fast and hard, as soon as they're sure. She might tell us where she went. Wiley might have lingered there. He lingered last time. About 30 minutes, according to Klopp. Maybe he thinks it's a security measure."
"She won't tell us."
"We'll ask her, nicely.
But that way we burn the Iranian."
"Can you get him out?"
"Tonight?"
"Right now. You must have rehearsed it."
"I'd have to talk to Mr. Ratcliffe at the NSC. Sinclair said, "Damn right you would. All of us would."
Reacher said, "We need a decision."
Sinclair said, "We won't get one inside 30 minutes, but we still have a car at the house. We'll know when she's back for the night. That gives us hours."
"That's half a loaf. We don't get Wiley."
"Not this time, but they must have fixed another meeting. This is a back-and-forth negotiation. She might tell us where and when."
"Better to hit her now. She thinks her job is done. She's coming down off a high. Her adrenaline is low. She'll be braver in the morning."
Bishop said, "I'll call Ratcliffe." And he hung up, crackly and distant.
The new messenger was touched on the leg by one man and on the bottom by another, but she ignored them both and pushed on through the throng. She wondered if they thought she was an employee of the club. Western behaviors had been explained to her. She could see Wiley up ahead, watching her. A frank and interested stare. Maybe he thought she was an employee, too. She walked up to him and leaned close to his ear so he could hear above the noise, and she said in carefully practiced English,
"I bring greetings from your friends in the East. The elevation of Sugarland Regional Airport is 82 feet above sea level."
Wiley said, "Well, don't this just beat the band?" She said, unsure,
"Does it?"
"They sent a girl."
"Yes, sir, they did."
"And you speak English?"
"Yes, sir, I do."
Then suddenly Wiley said, "Why? Why did they send a girl? Are they saying no?"
"No, sir, that's not the message."
"And what is?"
"The message is we accept your price."
"Say that again."
"We accept your price."
"What? All of it?"
"Sir, what I am permitted to know is we accept your price."
Wiley closed his eyes.
Bigger than Rhode Island, visible from outer space. His new Swiss friends would be delighted, too. It was double what he had told them. He had never expected to get it all. He would have plenty left over. A massive fortune. He would have a portfolio. Guys in suits would call him on the phone. He opened his eyes. He said,
"When?"
The messenger said,
"I believe you agreed on a delivery date. Your friends in the East expect you to honor it."
"No problem," Wiley said. "As agreed is fine."
"Then that is the response I will carry back."
"Tell them it's a pleasure doing business. And tell them thanks for the extra gift. Much appreciated." She said, unsure again,
"Sir, I brought nothing with me."
"You brought yourself," Wiley said. "You're the gift, right? I mean, get with the program. Why else would they send a girl with the good news? You're the icing on the cake, like when you get a bottle of scotch when you buy a car."
"I don't understand."
"You like this place?"
On the stage, a naked woman was lying on a plastic sheet. Three men were urinating on her face. The messenger said,
"It seems very popular."
"We could go to a hotel."
She had been coached. She said,
"Sir, this is a business arrangement. It can't proceed any further until I get home. Safe and sound."
"Okay," Wiley said. "I get it. But you got to give me some little thing. We're friends. We're celebrating here. I'm giving you people something you never had before." "One more button."
"What?"
"On your shirt. Right here, like a token to seal the deal."
Great struggles require great sacrifices, and it was a small enough price, she thought. The room was dark. No one was looking. They were all watching the stage. She undid the third button. She parted the seams. Wiley looked and smiled. He said,
"I knew I could make you do it."
She walked away through the crowd, ignoring the grabbing hands, up the stairs, past the doorman on the stool, out to the street, where she walked 20 paces and flagged down a cab. She settled in the back seat and said in carefully practiced German,
"The airport, please. International departures."
Chapter 23. In a different club, 2 miles away, 2 men were having dinner. The club was small, but paneled in oak. The tables were cramped, but the cloths were linen. More wine was served than beer. Lamb chops were on the menu. One of the men was an importer of shoes from Brazil. He was a solid figure, about 45 years old. His hair was blonde, going gray, and his face was red, also going gray. His name was Dremler. He was in a suit with a high lapel. The other man was similar in appearance, mid-40s, bulky, a little redder, a little less gray. He was also in a suit, a chain store label, but not cheap. His name was Muller. He was a policeman. Dremler said, "One of our members is a man named Helmut Klopp. He saw an Arab talking to an American and reported it. Guess what happened?" Muller said,
"Nothing, probably."
2 secret investigators came here from America in a big hurry. Your chief of detectives was kissing their ass."
"Grisma?"
"So, evidently, what Klopp saw was a very important meeting. They questioned him for hours. He says they showed him 200 photographs, but he recognized none of them. So they made a sketch from the description he gave them."
"That's a lot of work."
"Exactly," Dremler said. "Therefore, something is going on of great importance to the Americans. One of their own is talking to an Arab. We'd like to know what about. Is one buying and the other selling? We need you to see if Griezmann wrote anything down."
"Why?" Muller said. "Why help either Griezmann or the Americans?"
"We'll be helping ourselves," Dremler said. "Don't you see? We could get in the middle of this. There will be money going one way and something else going the other, either of which we could use."
"Or both.
And we could use them better than they could. Even part of it could help us make a statement. They've got their cause, and we've got ours. May the best man win."
"We're planning a hijack?"
"We should at least consider it."
"Okay," Muller said. "I'll see what I can find."
A waiter in a short jacket took their plates away. Dremler said,
"One more thing."
"Yes?" Muller said.
"We have 4 youth members who were beaten up outside the bar. They were quite badly hurt. They say their attacker was a very big man, an American, holding to a pro-occupation position. He was with a dark-haired woman."
"And?"
"According to Helmut Klopp, those were the secret investigators from America. The descriptions match exactly."
"Okay."
"I can't let such a thing go unpunished. Klopp says the man's name is Gleacher, and the woman's name is Negley. I would like to find them. I'm sure your chief of detectives knows where they're staying. I need you to see if he wrote it down."
"Okay," Muller said again. "I'll see what I can find."
At 10 o'clock in the evening, Hamburg time, Ratcliffe approved Plan B. At 11 o'clock, Reacher gave up on it. The messenger had not come home. She was never planning to. That was clear by then. Griezmann said she could have taken any one of 20 or more international flights in the last few hours, or flown domestic to Berlin, where the whole world was a hop and a skip away, or driven to Amsterdam, or taken a train to Paris, or
gone to another safe house in the city, which was a separate nightmare all by itself. Reacher and Sinclair were in Sinclair's room, all showered and dressed long ago. Negley was back. They had brought her up to speed with the whole sorry mess, the missed cues, the wrong assumptions, the late connections, which led inevitably to a debate about next steps, which led inevitably to a debate about the fingerprint. Sinclair said,
"Wiley has Sixth Amendment rights to a speedy trial for the homicide, which he wouldn't get because we would tie him up for years about the other thing, and we can't let the Germans have him first because we might never get him back again."
Negley said,
"We could negotiate that ahead of time.
We can't be in a position where we have to ask the Germans for permission to run our own national security the way we want to.
We'd be giving up all kinds of capabilities. The clock is really ticking now. It's getting loud."
Sinclair said,
"Reacher?"
He said, "I think it's 50-50. A physical search of the city would be a waste of time. Even if they could eyeball 1,000 faces a day, it would take nearly 5 years to cover the whole population. But their records could be useful. Wiley came to town not more than 4 months ago. We know that for sure. So we have a hard start date. Obviously, he rented a place because he killed the hooker in her apartment, not a hotel room. So he has a lease somewhere. And then a new name. Probably German, to go with his new passport, probably also German. He has utility bills, probably a telephone. We have no access to those databases. That's where Griezmann could help us."
"Yes or no?"
"I'm biased," Reacher said. "I owe the guy."
"He did nothing for you.
He didn't find Wiley, and he didn't find the messenger. He tried."
"What did you think of Mr. Bishop from the consulate?"
"The head of station?"
"The CIA veteran?"
"He's not bad for an old guy."
"Obviously, our older German speakers were trained under the previous system, for duty in East Germany, not the civilized West. They like to know everything about everybody, for recruitment back then and for blackmail, and for a better understanding of the local inside stories. They have extensive files, not all of them in the official cabinets."
"And?"
"Chief of Detectives Griezmann was the dead hooker's client about a year ago. 4 times. We know this for sure. He spent his kid's college fund. Therefore, my guess is he wants to close the case so no one goes poking and prying too far back. My guess is his noble quest for justice is not so noble after all."
Reacher paused a beat. "Okay," he said.
"So, yes or no?"
"Wiley still walks on a homicide."
"We can't hang him twice."
Reacher paused again. Then he said, "Griezmann was stupid."
"Overcome by lust," Sinclair said. "It happens."
"He was stupid because of what you're going to realize about 5 seconds from now. Only because you're a nicer person than me."
Sinclair didn't answer. Then she said, "Oh."
Reacher nodded. "We can sidestep the fingerprint issue completely. We don't need to trade. We can get everything we want by blackmailing the guy."
"I hope so," Sinclair said.
"Except I don't want to do that. So not yet, okay? Wiley is an AWOL soldier in the same city as me. It's money in the bank."
"How much time would Griezmann save you?"
"He's a last resort either way around. I don't want to get bogged down in databases. There are other ways. I was trained under the previous system, too. So Griezmann's zipper problem doesn't matter yet. There's nothing he can do for us right now."
"Are you saying that because you owe him?"
"I'm saying it because it's true.
What are the other ways?
We get to know the guy. We find him from the inside.
By then, Nagley had the transcripts from the original AWOL file, so she and Reacher left Sinclair in her room and headed down to Nagley's to read them. The physical chronology was straightforward enough. While he had failed to return from a routine 96-hour pass, simple as that, he had never been seen again. He had mentioned nothing in advance to his crewmates about where he was going on the pass. Best guess was Frankfurt, where the hookers were plentiful and inventive because of the convention business. Did Wiley like hookers? No more than the next guy, was the answer. Then there were background questions to build up a picture of the guy. Hobbies, interests, enthusiasms, things he talked about. He was from Texas, and sometimes he talked about beef cattle. He was proud of his hometown. Sometimes he got all excited and said things he seemed to regret later. Other times he was quiet. One time, he said he had joined the army only because an uncle had told him stories about Davy Crockett. He liked beer better than hard liquor, and he didn't smoke. He was unmarried and had never talked about a partner back home. He was extremely happy where he was. He liked his posting and gave the impression he had aimed for it.
That's weird, Nagley said. Most AWOLs aren't extremely happy where they are. That's kind of the point.
Reacher said, and who would aim for a chaparral unit on an abandoned front? The guy is still a private, always will be. He must have known.
Was Davy Crockett even in the army?
Not this army. It was the Lawrence County Militia in Tennessee. And then he was at the Alamo, of course. Which was a heroic story, for sure, but dying, besieged, and hopelessly outnumbered is not exactly the image of glory we want recruits to bring in with them.
We should find the uncle. Maybe they're close.
You think Wiley is sending him postcards?
He might have told him something. Apparently, he blurts things out and then regrets them later. Maybe that's why he killed the hooker. I've heard of that happening. Guys boast about what they're doing because they feel good in the moment.
Okay, Reacher said. Find the uncle and check with his commanding officers from 3 years ago, basic training and then Mother Sill. Did he really aim for Germany, as in aim specifically, like a target? That would change my thinking. That would make this whole thing feel planned. Not purely opportunistic.
3 years is a very long game.
Worth it for $100 million.
We don't have anything worth $100 million.
Make the calls, Reacher said. I'll be back later.
Where are you going?
For a walk.
I noticed Dr. Sinclair seemed more relaxed tonight.
Did she?
She had a definite glow.
Maybe she does yoga.
Or deep breathing.
Reacher said nothing. The man named Mueller stopped in at the Central Police Station. It was where he worked. He was second in command in the traffic division. Not ideal for access to Griezmann's office, but the place was quiet that night. Griezmann's floor had spacious suites with secretarial stations outside. They were all deserted. All the bosses were basically paper shufflers. They wrote things up and their secretaries did the filing, once at lunchtime and then again first thing the next morning. Griezmann's secretary's inbox was piled high. Mueller was not a brave man. But he was a loyal comrade in arms. He made a deal with himself. He would read through the in-tray, but he wouldn't search Griezmann's desk. A sensible compromise. He felt all reasonable people in the movement would agree with him. Information was important, but so was keeping a guy in a job at the highest level. or close to it. He clamped the pile of papers between his palms and carried them away, down the hallway to the fire door, and down the fire stairs to his own floor and his own hallway and his own office. Negley called Landry in McLean, Virginia, and asked him about Wiley's family, his uncles specifically, possibly one in particular who maybe lived close by and had an influence on the kid growing up. Landry said, "Wiley has no uncles."
"You sure?"
"Both parents were only children."
"Great uncles?"
"I'll take a look."
"What was the state of the parents' marriage?"
"The father took off early and was never seen again. The mother raised Wiley as a single parent. No brothers or sisters, just the two of them."
"Did the mother get a boyfriend later?
He might have been called an uncle in front of the kid." "Could have been one after another. Could have been a lot of uncles."
"Can you check?"
"We'd have to find the mother and get some agents to pay a call. That kind of thing has to be done face to face. It takes time. Old boyfriends aren't in the databases, and some aren't happy memories."
"It might be worth it
if the great uncles don't pan out." "Could take days. You nearly had the guy."
"He's still in the city."
Negley killed the call and checked the AWOL file for the crewmate who had mentioned the uncle. She dialed the Frankfurt MPs and told them to bring the guy in for further and better particulars. Then she checked Wiley's personnel file for the commanders who had written his initial fitness reports, Fort Benning and then Fort Sill. She called a friend in personnel command. The Benning guy had moved on to Bragg. The Sill guy was still in Oklahoma 3 years later. She got the numbers and started dialing. Muller scanned one scrap of paper after another. Griesman's output was prodigious. Most of it was normal, ass-covering bullshit. Trivia from below to be shoveled up above. Standard practice. Everyone did it. No one ever wanted the buck to stop with him. No one ever wanted to be at an official inquiry saying, "Yes, it was me who judged it not worth passing on, so it's all my fault." There were routine reports from every kind of case. None of them meant anything. Until 5 stapled pages about Helmut Klopp, an interrogation, photographs, issues with the translator, no knowledge of what had been said in the bar. Actual conversation had not been overheard. The American investigators were named as Reacher and Negley, but that was all. Nothing about where they were staying. Muller thought the consulate, maybe, or maybe not. They were U.S. Army, not CIA. A hotel? Nothing was mentioned. He plowed on, safe enough as long as he kept his light low and his door shut. An unexpected visitor could be counted on to knock, or at least call out. Not that there would be an unexpected visitor. It was late and the building was quiet. Eventually, he came to an interim report about a surveillance operation. Recent. That evening, in fact. He had dumped the pile upside down. He was reading it in chronological order. The surveillance had been fruitless. The negative result had been communicated to Reacher in his hotel room, which meant the Hamburg police had run an operation for the American military. Interesting. Reacher's hotel was not named, but the switchboard number Griesman had called was recorded. The traffic division had access to a standard reverse phone directory, so Muller started his computer and looked up the number and got the hotel's name. He knew the place very well, a bijou establishment on a side street in a good but not quite best neighborhood. Sometimes the manager called to complain about people parking right in front, because that ruined the image.
They had a guy with a top hat. Where was he supposed to stand? Muller himself had been out there twice. Nothing he could do. Not without 2 years of due process to get the curb changed, which the city's lawyers would never allow. Suppose all the small hotels wanted the same treatment. Chaos. It was already bad enough with the big brands. Muller picked up his desk phone and dialed Dremler at home. Chapter 24. Richard stepped around the guy with the top hat and set out walking. It was midnight, local time. The streets were lit by lamps on poles, and by the soft light of storefronts dimmed to a nighttime glow, and by the blue flicker of late shows on television sets behind undraped apartment windows. He walked a figure of eight around two random blocks and saw no one behind him, or ahead of him, or in the shadows. Just a routine precaution, a habit. He was 35 years old and still alive. Had to mean something. He found the street with the bar in it, where Klopp had seen Wiley the first time, where Billy Bob and Jimmy Lee had sold their scrap Berettas, where German ID was for sale. He stopped 40 yards short and eyeballed the place from an angle. The ground floor of the stone building, the center door, the planked wood facade varnished and shiny, the small windows with their lace curtains and their paper flags. The lights were on inside. By night they looked warm and welcoming. Richard crossed the street and went in through the door. Inside it was smoky and loud. It was late, but there were maybe 60 people still in there, mostly men, in tight private groups of 3 or 4. Some were at tables, and some were standing, cramped and back-to-back with other huddles. There were upholstered benches under the windows. All were full, like seats on a rush-hour subway. Reacher eased through the crowd, gently but firmly, like a police horse at a riot. Most folks got out of his way fast enough. They looked like business people or clerical workers, some of them senior, some of them doing well. Reacher didn't see Wiley. He didn't expect to. He was a lucky man, but not that lucky. He sensed people looking at him from behind. Delayed reaction. Weren't we warned about a man like that? He made it to the bar after a roundabout route, and he wedged himself in and waited to be served. Both bartenders were men. Both had heavy canvas aprons tied around their waists. One glanced his way. Reacher asked for a cup of black coffee. The guy set an espresso machine going and ducked back for his money. Reacher asked him no questions. Life wasn't like the television shows. Bartenders never spilled the beans. Why would they? Who came first? The 60 people they had to live with every night of their lives? Or the lone guy they had never seen before? Instead, he carried his coffee into the crowd and sat down in the spare seat where 3 guys were at a 4-top table. They looked at him like he had committed an embarrassing faux pas, and then they looked away, and a lot of coughing and false starts indicated they were changing the subject and commenting. Reacher heard the word Arschloch, which he knew from many in-country arguments meant asshole. But he didn't react. Instead, he drained his cup and headed for the payphone on the opposite wall. He got a coin ready and dialed Orozco. Orozco said, "Are we in trouble?" Reacher said, "No, we're good, if I get the guy." "I thought you almost had him." "I screwed up. I didn't expect the woman messenger. Live and learn." "So what now?" "Did Billy Bob and Jimmy Lee tell you who sold them the ID?" "They won't. They're scared. This is some kind of big mobbed-up thing, but not Italian. Nostalgic Germans instead. They have members and chapters.